Okay, you ready to go then?
Yeah.
What's up? This is Movies On Up. Behind every little fish is a great white lie. It is no lie that my co-host is seated across from me, and that is, of course, Mr. Dave Becella.
Chomp chomp.
Big fish in a small pond is Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Behind every little fish is a great white lie is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, you can send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave your guess on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your guess to us @moviesonup on the Twitter if you are correct. And if we choose you, you will get yourself a Movies On Up prize package. And that is no lie. This week, Alexander Aja swims his way back into the theaters with Crawl, which, if you have not seen the trailers or the advertisements for it, essentially, a guy's house is flooding and an alligator gets in there. So not only does he have to deal with rising water, he's also got to deal with this dinosaur in his house that's trying to eat him and presumably his daughter, which got Dave to thinking about another movie, Enclosed Interior Space, which doesn't usually have killer animals, and that movie is Bait from 2012.
Not the Jamie Foxx one.
And I was going to tell that story. It makes perfect sense that we're doing, I mean, in a fashion, it makes perfect sense that we're doing the Shark in a Grocery Store movie. But I had forgotten that Crawl comes out this week. I just had a document from Dave that said this week we're doing Bait. And I was like, the Jamie Foxx movie? What the fuck are we doing that for?
Which I like. I like that
movie. It's a fine movie. Fine. But I had no idea. I was like, why are we doing this? Why am I going to have to look for this Jamie Foxx movie, which is not streaming anywhere easy? I got to talk to him. Like, we got to get this switched. And then he told me I had the wrong Bait. It did make a lot more sense now as to why we are doing that movie. As we've mentioned, Bait came out in 2012, directed by Kimball Randall, starring Xavier Samuel, Shari Vinson, and Alex Russell. It is an Australian-Singapore
duet.
They came together to make this movie, and if you've watched the movie, Singapore gets a shout-out real early on. That's where our characters, Vinson and Samuel, are about to elope to before all of the badness ensues. This is the time in the show where we generally go over some box office numbers. There is no real U.S. box office to speak of for Bait. I never saw it released in a theater. I believe the first time I saw it was on the Sci-Fi Channel, which is 100% where this movie belongs. But it did gross $24 million in China in its run in 2012 on its way to a worldwide haul of $32.8 million for this movie against a reported budget of $20 million. Which is generally good enough for a sequel. Exactly. But according to The Hollywood Reporter, plans for a 2014 follow-up about an airline crash between China and Australia, wherein the plane impacts the water, starts to sink, and the people on board are forced to fend off sharks, seems like it may be a little familiar to the Malaysia Airlines crash. So they, I think wisely, decided to scrap that project. Before we get too far into Bait, I think most of the movies that we do, as far as like movie episodes, I want to say they're movies that generally people have heard of. I mean, we do have some here and there. I think Smashed we did, which is probably not.
I think the early Britt Marling stuff.
Like, yeah. Some of that may not be in a regular filmgoer's wheelhouse. I don't think Bait is either, unless you happen to spend a lot of time on the Sci-Fi Channel, in which case I tip my cap to you.
Or you really like grocery stores or sharks.
Yeah, here the two shall meet. I think Bait is best described as a movie, like one of those asylum movies that almost seems like they're made exclusively for air on the Sci-Fi Channel. And if you keep it in that context, I think it's enjoyable.
It's really good if you put it in that concept. Like when you hear grocery store shark movie, it's easy to picture Sharknado or one of those sci-fi movies. Those are some pretty much unwatchable. I think Bait is a really competent movie. If there were a sci-fi original and I watched it and it was as good as Bait, I would be floored. It's tongue-in-cheek to an extent, but it takes this silly premise that sounds so ridiculous. It makes it work. And it's not a goofy movie.
I think that's...
It's not a goof show.
That's the key. Sharknado certainly leans into goofiness. Let's get a bunch of...
Lean into it. They crawl through it.
Sure.
Come out the other side.
And then crawl right back in. Let's get a bunch of cameos. Let's make a premise that's completely unbelievable. I mean, I guess you could understand that if tsunami were to flood a grocery store, whatever's in the ocean is going to be coming with the wave, and maybe that's a 12-foot great white shark. But really, the premise is the only thing that's buffoonery in this movie, if we want to even call it buffoonery. Whereas Sharknado, okay, the premise is crazy, but that's the most plausible part of the movie from there. This, I want to say, it's going to sound stupid coming out of my mouth, but as far as supermarket shark movies go, it's relatively grounded.
It is. The only other ways is there's a couple scenes when the shark's out of water, the effects aren't great. Like the opening shot, some of the effects are, you can tell it's a $20 million movie. But it's pretty grounded. It deals with some stuff. It sets up with this couple that are clearly in love, and then something happens, and then you pick up a year later.
A shark happens.
Yeah, a shark eats the one's brother. And the one blames himself, and the other one goes to Singapore, and he leaves her. So it starts off with that like emotional investment. Like, you see how close he is to the brother, and you see how much him and the Sharni Vinson are in love, which who couldn't love her? And then that happens, and then it just picks up a year later, and you go to the grocery store. What I like about this is it, for a grocery store shark movie, it doesn't...
This is probably the best grocery store
It
shark
doesn't
movie.
Rush to get in the sharks in the grocery store.
No, because you have the Jurassic Park tease where we see what may be the same shark.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, so you get the shark attack early, but then you build up the characters. And this is where British horror was doing so well in like the late aughts, early tens, where you're introducing characters. You're not just introducing a body count. You're introducing people that when they die, it matters. And that's what it does. You meet Alex Russell's character. You meet his daughter. Through that, you meet his dad, you meet the manager, the security guard, the kid that Alex Russell from Chronicle went to school with, and his girlfriend, and their dog. You meet these people, and they're not just throwaway characters, and they all have enough there to where they're not caricatures. And when you put this many people together in these kind of movies, it's easy to have like caricatures or cartoons of people. And really, I think they avoid that. The boyfriend is probably the closest. The blonde
kid. The walking haircut.
Yeah, he's probably the closest, but even he has some moments. And then Julian McMahon, I think, never said this about Julian McMahon, gives a pretty good performance for what he's given. And so I like it. It gives you characters. It sets up enough. And then she comes back, and there's Josh in the grocery store, and there's her with Singapore and Tony or whatever his name is.
Singapore Steve.
Because here's the thing. It's not just a grocery store shark movie.
No, it's much more than that.
It's a tsunami during a robbery.
Yes.
That turns into a grocery store shark movie. So there's a lot of layers here.
Yeah, if you had...
It's like picking stuff out of a hat.
Yeah, grocery store robbery.
Couple broken up
tsunami,
for a year, reuniting for the first time. Grocery store robbery. Sharks. Oh, okay. Tsunami.
Bingo.
Yep.
You mentioned the British horror. Where Bait at least fails the test for me is where Neil Marshall makes all his deaths count. We just kind of use him as sort of the golden...
Like The Descent's a great example.
Exactly. Those kind of movies, Dog Soldiers, that's what we mean when we say make the deaths matter. And when you said that specific time period, I knew that's kind of what we were talking about. I don't really think that Bait succeeds there. The deaths don't matter. No one of consequence dies outside of... Singapore Steve.
The survivor count is high.
Very high.
That's probably my only complaint with the movie.
Yes.
And some of the effects. The survivor count's high. And there are even characters like the grocery store girl who are introduced, and it's like, oh, she's expendable. She makes it.
Yes.
Spoiler alert. So a lot of people make it. But
the cop dad who's dealing with like
a broken leg.
A compound fracture of his leg that is gushing blood, you'd think he's not long for a shark movie. No, you'd be wrong.
He makes it.
If you got them in the Deadpool, you're okay.
I could have done with more deaths. Steve's, I thought, was great. I thought that's a really, really good death. It's heroic. It's shot very well. It's him sacrificing. And it's really, really good. And it brings... I say they avoided being cartoons. very easily you could have, okay, this couple broke up a year ago and she went to Singapore without him and he's just been a mess. Oh, they run into each other and she's got a guy from Singapore. Very easily they could have butted heads and they could have just been at each other's throat.
Yeah.
It didn't do that. It felt like a real thing where it's like, dude, you made her happy. She missed you. And him, as long as she's happy, it felt real. So that death, I think, that set up that death to be powerful. And it was a really, that was his idea.
Yes.
You know,
his idea to encase himself in a shopping cart. That's what I have a problem with. Okay.
It worked.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've seen videos of sharks, not 12 foot, absolutely tear up a shark cage. But this one essentially bumps its nose on Singapore Steve and is like, nah, fuck it. I don't need this in my life.
I think the whole point was that it didn't know it was a dude under there.
How do they know that they're dudes inside the shark cage?
Different sharks.
I don't think that's accurate. I believe it's Shark Week now, so like we could probably find...
It's always Shark Week.
That's true.
That's Stormy Daniels.
Somewhere.
But I thought that was a good death. That was a great death. And there's that moment of him releasing the air,
yes.
You know, and it's like...
You know that he's sacrificing himself.
He doesn't just do it. There's that moment of him thinking like, is it worth it? This will save everybody, but my chances. And then there's him trying to get out, and it's just... I like how that was shot. I thought there was some cool direction in this. I thought some of the stuff was cool. I thought security guard's death was shot cool, where she's holding the arm and it just looks like she's holding him and he's up and then his head just floats away.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Manager's death, I thought was, that's a
sure.
Shark movie death. That's yeah. What you get. And then other than that, there weren't really...
That's my complaint, is in a
there
movie,
should have been more deaths, yeah.
In a movie about a 12-foot shark, the best death we get... is Singapore Steve, who drowns. He doesn't even get to be eaten by a shark. Steve has the misfortune of not even being afforded the dignity of not being able to be identified when the rescuers come. And believe me, they will.
Why is this guy covered in sharpened car?
Exactly.
Canned
Mr.
corn
and Mrs.
taped
Steve
to his legs.
Are going to know that their son died looking like a dollar store night at the clearance table. That is the real shame in this. The other deaths, security guard is cool. Jessup, the store manager, when he gets bitten in half, those are deaths that you expect in a shark movie. We get to see kind of the red plumes of blood under the water. But for the most part, everybody that dies in this movie is either a dick. The haircut's
other,
a dick.
Yeah.
The other robber's a dick.
Yeah.
Even Jessup, when he gets bitten, you don't really necessarily care for him as a character.
Yeah.
There were some options there to have not just Steve... be the lone one to sacrifice himself, and they sort of play it off like that's gonna happen.
Yeah, you think Julian McMahon's gonna
get electrocuted or sacrifice himself to get everybody out? No, he's fine.
Yeah,
everybody's fine.
That was missing, because not only is he fine, grocery store clerk lady whose friend just got shot because he was robbing her store, like, ends with her head on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, she didn't know her that
know.
Well.
She worked
yeah.
with her, but still, somebody yeah. shoots your. He didn't shoot her, but
no.
somebody comes in and results in your coworker being shot. I'm not cuddling up with them, but the tsunami part delivered the body count. And here's my thing is with disaster movies, I think that is very, very crucial. And I think
the disaster.
Yes. And Bird Box, I think that was the best part of Bird Box was when it started happening. That original scene of her on the street.
When the birds got out of the box.
Yes. I thought that was great. It's an odd, different kind of disaster, but it's that whole segment was great. The tsunami, for this budget, actually pretty cool. Like, it wasn't bad.
No, and it resulted in some bodies bobbing in the water. Which,
some pointless
yeah.
propeller to face kills.
Yeah. Which was, that's what you come to this movie for. You don't necessarily come for the reconciliation of a relationship shattered by... guilt and the untimely munching.
And that's where the title is perfect, because bait, you come into this movie thinking you're getting one thing, and then it hooks you with something completely
bait
different.
Bait and switch. Yeah,
yeah,
you feel like the shark that's tied to the shelf there by the end of the movie.
Because it really does. For a horror movie, we say that one of the downfalls is the lack of deaths, but on the other hand, it's really full of hope. Everybody wants out. And it's not this people turning on. It's not like Train to Busan, which I love. Some of my favorite movies are like, oh, the people are the villains, not the sharks in the grocery store. This movie isn't that.
There's one of those guys.
There's one at the end. But the sharks in the grocery store are the villains. They're the clear villains in this movie. And everybody kind of works together. Everybody wants to be a hero, not for the glory, but for the actual sacrifice. That's where Steve came in, the daughter diving in to save her dad. Everybody wants to get out of here, and everybody wants to make sure everybody else gets out of here. So you don't see that a lot in horror movies. A lot of times it's every person for themselves, and this kind of didn't have that. And I liked that about it. You know, when they walk out and survive, it's like, okay, yeah, I wish some of you were dead, but, like, I feel good.
At least half.
I feel good. Like, I'm fine with this.
We mentioned at the top about not being tongue-in-cheek. I tend to think that it is a little more self-aware than maybe at first blush. There's a lot of moments. We mentioned the heroic Sir Singapore Steve, poor Steve, where there's some melodramatic
Two shark deaths are overly done.
Yes, the deaths of the sharks are very much overly done.
Which, I'll say, pretty solid deaths for the sharks.
Yeah, I do think that the last one, the inverted shocker, if you will, that's the kind of stuff right there that makes me think that, like, this movie knows exactly what it is, leans into it just enough, but doesn't pretend to be anything else. It is a movie about...
It's a grocery store shark movie.
Yes. So if I want to have a man suspend himself from the ceiling and lower...
Shoot a shark to death,
then it fits. And you know what? We're going to play it for the... This is... Kicking
it's
the alien out of the spaceship.
Moment. It's a Hollywood moment.
It certainly is. And
he's going to jump and land with his legs hanging and shoot, and it's all going to be slow motion. He's going to dive off the car with the shotgun underwater, put it up to its chin, and then just cut to blood in the water.
Whose blood? It's not the guy holding the shotgun. Spoiler alert. And that guy holding the shotgun. And the taser, I believe, is Australia's own Xavier Samuel. We had mentioned Alex Russell at the top. Chronicle, for better or worse, gets a lot of run on this podcast. And Alex Russell is the star of Chronicle.
He's the not famous one.
Yes.
But he's the not Dame to Honor Michael C. Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan. Right.
He's more the Michael D. Jordan
yes.
of this movie.
Jordan's a bona fide movie star at this point. Dane DeHaan is a guy who starred in movies, some of which I really like. But our boy Alex Russell is maybe third billed in an Australian supermarket shark movie. That's kind of unfortunate.
This was same year as Chronicle 2, I think.
When
Chronicle 2012?
Yeah, I think
yeah.
you might be right. And it's not to say that he's really rebounded after 2012 or he's shot out of a cannon, but I guess it's not to say that he's had an opposite career trajectory. They are both in the same year, but man.
You talk about expendable characters, though. His character was pointless.
That
in
whole
this.
Arc. Everybody in the parking garage.
I like that. How long can you do sharks in a grocery store? Throw in some sharks in a parking garage. That makes sense. But his whole thing, he was just Josh. He was the same character, just at a different spot in his life. Like, he was Josh before the shark ate his friend. So it would have made sense for him to get eaten by a shark.
Or for them just not to be in the movie at all. I can understand if you're going to have superfluous characters because you need a body count. But of all the people, including the dog, of all the people in the car park, only the haircut gets killed.
Especially because when it cuts, you know, the shark kills him, and then it cuts to so much later. Alex Russell's the first dude you see, and it's like, oh, handsome white dude. He dyed his hair. And then you realize, like, oh, that's not him. That's a different handsome Australian white dude. Because then you see Josh in the... You look like crap. Go wash yourself up. Depressed stock in the shelves at the grocery store.
Yeah, I mean, he looks about like I would expect that I would look.
Year after a shark ate me, if you were supposed to be doing the buoy that morning.
And I was marrying your sister. Yes, that's exactly how I would look. Less defined abs, but apart from that, I mean, it's spot on.
Going back to the effects, when the shark's above water, it looks terrible. Some of the underwater shark stuff, like when it's just like in the back, I thought looked really good. Even it bumping against Steve, I thought looked okay. The underwater stuff looked good, and there was some cool shots.
And the director had said that he wanted to keep things as practical as possible, but there were some, and I go back to the Rory thing, like right at the beginning of the movie.
That's not practical.
No, it's not practical, and it does look terrible. The CGI is not good, but it is an Australian supermarket shark movie. It's not fucking Jurassic Park.
And the thing is, the expectations it sets with the shark coming up and eating them and then him floating in the water gets you thinking, like,
from there.
Gets you thinking, like, oh, this movie has a tsunami in it. That's going to look terrible. And then the tsunami comes and looks a lot better than you expect it. Is it 2012 or Day After Tomorrow level or even like The Impossible? No. Is it a competent tsunami? Yeah. Is it better than the opening shark death? Hard not to be, but yeah.
They really do. In the Jurassic Park tease, they set the bar
so
low.
And then they way over-deliver.
Yeah, that is classic.
I think that's by design.
They're baiting the hook there. Like, if you can sit through this.
It looks like a sci-fi movie when that first death.
Absolutely.
And then it happens, and it's like, oh, this is a straight Cinemax movie instead.
It's all upwards from here. Aside from the underwater shark stuff, Bait did a decent job with the rising water levels and the electricity element being used to create that extra amount of danger and suspense. And that kind of gives me pause to think that with a director like Aha, Crawl could actually be better than one might think. It's easy. And you had mentioned last week that a movie that maybe we were dismissive of because the premise sounded a little thin. It's easy to be dismissive of movies like this. There were a couple years.
You're me when you get way amped for them.
Well, that's true,
this
too.
This is up my alley.
In fairness, it is. But I think there were a couple movies a couple years ago, some shark movies like that. The Shallows.
Shallows and 47 meters or whatever.
A certain amount of distance down. Those movies, I think, had a pretty good showing. The plot was a little more what we were used to. But I think it's easy to be dismissive of these kind of movies and, oh, that's just going to be stupid. Like, why would I waste my time? And if I'm speculating why you might waste your time, it's because with a director like Aha, this kind of premise of being in such an enclosed space with a shark, generally, if you're in the ocean, get out of the ocean. And the shark is not going to
be. You're in your house.
Right. You're in your house and you're stuck there.
The alligator is coming from inside the house.
Yeah, now you've taken all the mystery out of it. But Aha's a competent director. And we've seen, and I'm not trying to say that Kimball Rendall is or is not a competent director. I'm not very familiar with his work. But he made this premise work.
I think he was a second unit director on stuff like The Matrix and stuff. But then, like, Bait is really his only.
Do you think that? Or do you actually know that?
I think
you
so.
You think you know it? Because that's kind of fucking impressive that
I
you
think
just
he is.
Pulled that out of your ass.
Is he?
I don't know.
I think he is.
I just said I'm not familiar
either
with
either one
work.
Of us could look it up.
I'm kind of putting the onus on you since you're the one that made the claim.
So we'll just consider it true.
He's
he
one
was
of the
like
Wachowskis.
Second unit director on The Matrix, I think, or maybe stunt director or something. And then he had another movie that looked like a straight to sci-fi movie. But yeah, Bait was really good. And the thing with alligators in a house movie, like, I like Kai Scodaro. I really love Barry Pepper. And that's the dad and the daughter in the movie. So yeah, you give me those two actors in a house with alligators directed by Alexander Aha. Aha, I'm into it.
He was the second unit director for The Matrix Reloaded, Matrix Revolutions, iRobot, Ghost Rider, Underworld, Rise of the Lycans, Killer Elite, Gods of Egypt. That's not his entire filmography, but
that's a solid resume as a second unit.
Heavy on action, sure. Aha's filmography, a little light recently. The last time we saw him was that Ninth Life of Louis Drax. It was the Jamie Dornan,
Aaron Paul
flick.
Movie,
yeah. So welcome back, Aha. That was a guy that in the infancy of the podcast, we did our director death match. He was a guy, I think he was in the world section. If he wasn't actually in the tournament, he was a guy we talked about.
So it
would have
been Piranha, High Tension.
Yeah. Which,
Hills Have Eyes remake.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Certainly High Tension and Piranha are really strong entries there. So, I mean, it's good to have him back, specifically back in the horror genre. So this is one that I may not run out to see, but I will check out.
You want a bonus rec for this week? It might be reaching a little
bit.
house wreck. Kaya Scodaro's trapped in the house with alligators in this movie. She was in a home invasion movie a few years back called Tiger House. I believe it's still on Netflix. It's a pretty competent like home invasion movie. It's a solid watch, and she's really, really good, and she's probably only gotten better. So I liked her in that. I like that home invasion movie. So this would be kind of Alligator House instead of Tiger House. There were no tigers in Tiger House, though.
Oh, talk about
although
bait.
Alexander Aja, I have a script idea for you.
That's it for bait. I mean, if you're half drunk one night and you got a bunch of people around that just want to watch something ridiculous, you could do much worse than bait. At least watch that until Crawl is out on video and then maybe check that out. Next week, The Lion King will be out in theaters, which would probably gross slightly more than $32 million. So we are going to be doing our favorite movies featuring or containing, maybe featuring is not a good usage, containing the death of a father.
Favorite dead dad movies.
Yeah, it was going to be our favorite James Earl Jones movies, as he was the voice of Mufasa, which...
And is again.
Yes, and is again. A spoiler alert, in order for Simba to be the Lion King, something has to happen to the old king, and that's getting trampled by wildebeests. So we got to thinking about doing our five favorite James Earl Jones movies, and we thought, that's going to be tough.
Yeah, he's one of those that you know. Like, you know, like, oh, that's the voice of Darth Vader, yeah. The voice of Mufasa. And yeah. You think, like, oh, he's got this great filmography. Name a James Earl Jones movie.
You know what? I do have one on my list next week that is not The Lion King.
But to find I have out The Lion King on my
what that is, come back next week. Until then,
keep it up.